unrelentlessly positive.
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever.
It indicates.
Indicative?
Hey, can we focus?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin, the 11 o'clock hour on this beautiful first Summer Fest Friday. I am your host, Kristen Bry. Our producer, Jane Matinera, is off for today. We got Kelvin on the board, and I am very excited for our next guest who comes about once a month to have ideological conversations on things that we don't always see eye to eye on. But I think what I appreciate about our friendship is that I think we both genuinely want to solve problems and come at these things with not the power political struggle, but actually, like, how do we make things better? CJ Safer, CEO of Institute for Reforming Government. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Happy Friday.
Happy
Amazing.
Friday.
Look at it. It's gorgeous out.
You're in shorts.
It's summer. We're finally here. Well, the nice thing about working at home on Fridays is you get to wear shorts.
That's what I know. It's great. I just live in spandex now, so I should not be telling anyone about their fashion decisions because I'm just peak comfort all the time.
We got like 2 months of this, right? I'm going to milk it. I'm going to milk every day, every hour for what it's worth.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I don't know if you caught it at all on your drive-in since you're here in person, but I spent the first segment of the show today talking about the Republicans' tax bill that came out yesterday. That is a huge, it's $3.5 billion. And it's a tax break for every single bracket, with the biggest being for the people who make the most. And my question was trying to just gauge people's behavior of, like, how much money moves the needle? Because you and I have talked about this before as far as, like, by lowering taxes, how much of a difference does it make to people's incomes and their household budgets to really feel like it moves the needle for them? And so as far as thinking about it that way, the amount of people, how much money per household this affects, like, how do you interpret what was introduced yesterday or passed yesterday, I should say. We'll see if it makes it all the way to the end, but passed.
Well, look, I think first off, we start off with let's start out with what impacts people. So first off, you start with, like, we have a $7 billion surplus, as you've mentioned, and that means the state government spent more than it's taken in, or it's taken in more. Yeah. And we need to kind of refund that back to the taxpayers. And to be honest, there is a bipartisan consensus in that. I mean, polling across the state shows that people think that income taxes are too high. Governor Evers did introduce a middle-class tax cut earlier in the year in February. Our issues, it was also kind of coupled with tax increases on manufacturers. I also argue his middle class tax cut wasn't big enough. I said that at the time. I thought he could have gotten bigger. So I think you kind of start out with that. Everyone kind of wants to figure out, how do we return this money back to the people, back to small businesses, back to middle class families? And then kind of, how do we move the needle, not just for families, but also for the state, for the economy? So what the Republicans did, they put out a plan, collapsed four brackets into three. We'll try not to boggle down listeners with too many numbers. Every single rate has a cut. Every single person is getting some sort of cut. That was not the case in Governor Evers's proposal. And there's a cut in the top rate. We can talk about that before everyone freaks out on Twitter. I was ratioed badly, and a lot of people were coming. I'm always ratioed whenever I talk about taxes, because the great bastion of civil discourse of Twitter.
It's only gotten better. I heard
it's only gotten better. but there's been a cut in the top rate from 7.6. to about 6.5%. I think that's incredibly significant. And the average taxpayer saves about $570. And it's going to vary. There's going to be more analysis that's going to come out next week. There's going to be economists with the University of Wisconsin. There's going to be the nonpartisan folks at the Fiscal Bureau. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, we have those numbers, you know, less than 24 hours.
What does this mean for each person?
Yeah. But it does mean it's some sort of cut. And for a lot of people, especially for those making between $13,000 to $300,000 a year, they're getting about a 17% cut. And I think depending on how much you make, right, it's going to be some money. And the more money you make, how percentages work, the more money you make, you'll get a potentially a bigger cut in absolute dollars. And that shouldn't, you know, that shouldn't shock anybody. I think the top rate cut is a big deal for the state of Wisconsin. There's been economists that have done this, and you can't really think this is something that is hard, I think, for some on the left, some Democratic lawmakers, Senator Evan Goyke. You have to appreciate that in order to really drive the economy, you have to go after that top rate, because we have a very high top rate. We have the 11th highest in the country.
I want you to finish, but I was going to have a follow-up question. Like, who are those people? So when we're talking about $280,000 a year, are we talking about employers, employees? Because I look at that as an individual amount of money. That's a large number. And so it's like, is the argument here, we're attracting people who are in that tax rate to come be employed here or to start businesses here or not leave? Or like, who is that group of people, and what is the argument as far as that is the people that we want, when that feels antithetical to when we talk about labor shortage? And that's like service industry workers. That is not people who are making $280,000 a year. So like, can you square that for me?
So how we would argue it is that top area, right? So you're tackling, there's a wide group of people. Yes, there's millionaires and billionaires in there. Absolutely, right?
Is this number correct, that there's only there's 66 people in Wisconsin who make over $30 million? Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm not one of them.
I'm also not one of them.
So I wouldn't know. but look, it is small businesses, and this is something that I think everyone in Wisconsin has to appreciate. 9 of every 10 small businesses in the state pay that top rate.
Is that true, though? Because I saw a different number that said at least for the professional and business income, that it was of the people who filed worth over $200,000, it was 7%. Are these two different numbers?
I'm not aware of that. We were pulling that. We've been pulling that. And that's kind of a commonly echoed talking point primarily using IRS data. But I think it's also kind of where they are categorized and where they're kind of like filing. But keep in mind, like, you know, we're not talking about corporations, right? But in any event, wherever you are, you have small businesses that are not paying they're not corporations. Mm-hmm. They're filing under, you know, primarily just paying under the individual income tax scheme, where they all get kind of sucked into it. That's small businesses, that's barbershops, that's startups, that's restaurants, maybe radio stations. I don't know.
Maybe not yet.
and you would want them to, you know, whenever we give back money, that's, you know, potentially more money that, you know, a barbershop or a coffee shop could pay for more employees or higher wages. We're talking about a lot of job creators too. And we're also talking about something that I think a lot of us have been kind of really trying to emphasize, which is, you know, we want people, we think that people move around the country because of that top rate, because of tax rates, and we want to keep them in the state of Wisconsin. We don't want them to leave. And this is something that I think, I'm not going to sit here and say that 7.6 to 6.5 is going to be an ultimate game changer. We think that that number's got to get ultimately to zero or pretty darn close to it, but it does make us more competitive to other states across the country.
So basically the argument is, this is a target to keep and retain people who make over $200,000.
I think it is not the silver bullet solution, but it is a main part of the solution.
And the argument for that is because they are job creators and just high income. Because if you cut their taxes, it's not like their income is creating more revenue if we're cutting it, right? So like, what is the genuine argument?
Unless if they leave.
But like, is the argument of like, that is the high ticket citizen for Wisconsin. Is it simply because of that, like the small business aspect of it? Or like, what is the premium on making it more appealing to that demographic specifically to live here?
It's a small business aspect. It's the aspect of it's people who are investing in communities, investing into nonprofits, people that are investing into civil society organizations. I mean, there's just a huge ripple effect. You know, just think of your small town, right? You don't want some of those main people who are investing into those communities to leave. And you look all across Wisconsin. I mean, there are some real philanthropists, there are some real businesses that have such a strong component to that. But it's also, you know, you're also talking about employees. I mean, you want to keep people in Wisconsin, and lower tax rates are going to get us closer to that than not. And that's why I think the Republicans went pretty aggressive on that top rate, but not so aggressive where it's something that I think the governor is going to have to give this a serious consideration to sign it.
You think so?
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, look, these are not all Republicans getting these tax breaks. Like,
oh no,
I mean, just look at the governor's, look at the Milwaukee suburbs, college educated, his voting block in Wauwatosa, in Brookfield, in Elm Grove, in Mequon, all these voters that are kind of gravitating who voted for him. These are the people that are getting strong tax breaks under what we're walking through. I think he's going to have to give it hard consideration because watering it down dramatically, I think it's also going to be shown that it has a dramatic less of an economic impact on the state. And ultimately, he can't rewrite, unless if he wants to kind of push this all the way into the fall,
yeah,
he can't rewrite the plan. This is what the legislature is sending it to him. So he can water it down by a partial veto, or he can sign it, or he can veto it. But again, that's going to push it into the fall, which I just don't think either side wants.
All right. Well, CJ Safer, so happy you're here. We're going to get another segment with you after we take a break. If you have any calls or questions, feel free to text or call that in, 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we'll be right back.
When the numbers don't add up, how can one man have that much luck? Mark the cards, load the dice. Everybody has got a price. Follow the money. See why it goes. Follow the money.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Good song choice, Calvin.
The numbers do add up.
Follow the money. Welcome back. We are our guest for this half hour is CJ Safer, CEO of the Institute for Reforming Government. And we spent the last segment talking about the Republicans' bill that they passed yesterday when it comes to tax cuts. But I feel like there's so much, since we haven't talked in a month or so, a lot is happening. I feel like all of my journalist friends who work at the Capitol are very tired because there's been a lot to keep up with. But as far as, in addition to, on top of, separate from, whatever you want to frame it, from the tax stuff, you know, the last time you were here, we talked about the major survey IRG did as far as going all over the state, talking to all sorts of people, and kind of and coming out with this report on, like, what do Wisconsinites want? And so as far as the debates that have been happening, things that have or have not made it into the Joint Finance Committee's discussion of what they want to fund, what they don't, how does that square with what you guys found in that survey as far as what people really want and care about and what we're choosing to prioritize by funding it?
Well, that's a fascinating question, right? And it's also an appreciation that about $90 billion of taxpayer money is going to be spent, I think, over the next 2 years. And this is going to be signed off. And, you know, I think the budget will be signed by 4th of July because everyone's got the same incentive. They want a summer vacation. That's a bipartisan agreement. No one wants to work in the summer.
Everyone wants to wear shorts again.
Everyone wants to wear shorts and be home over the summer, which I think that's going to motivate people to get a governor and the legislature to get an agreement done. But it's also an appreciation that, like, there are just some problems that aren't going to be fixed overnight. Even if there was agreement on how to solve them, we have some major issues that we discussed about a month ago. We've been on the road talking to different communities. Look, for example, one of the big ones is childcare. And
huge.
There is a lack of access to childcare in certain parts, affordability. We heard this with community leaders. We also did a poll by State Policy Network that showed that about 75% of voters said cost of childcare is a major issue for them. So Evers has done a bunch of childcare things in his budget. The legislature kind of responded. We can, you know, there's all these numbers, but at the end of the day, more money, you know, will be going to the state's child care subsidy program.
The loan, the $15 million.
Yeah, but that's
loan.
Primarily low income families, and not saying that that's good or bad or indifferent at the moment, but like, that's actually not tackling the 75% of Wisconsinites that think that childcare is a issue. That is tackling people almost irrespective of income levels. And
I mean, your youngest is still in daycare.
It's expensive.
You know what it is. Yeah.
And we've been very fortunate. We got in with a provider really early. But you know, a lot of people, everyone knows someone who has a childcare problem.
To read the comment section, and that's all anecdotal. It's not actual, but it's like reading the comment section of the videos I've made on childcare and people's real stories of having to quit or having to work different shifts and never seeing their partner or like all of the different, like, it's heartbreaking, right? Of how much this is. And like, what kind of draconian like place do we live in where the only response is, well, if you can't afford it, don't have kids. And it's like, we want people to want to have the size of family that they want to have, right? And that they're not making these choices of, I'm going to have one, you know, we're going to have fewer kids because we just, this is too expensive. This is not sustainable. And so, like, for you guys, like, how do we tackle this from your guys' point of view? Your guys being IRG.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I have all the answers. I mean, truly, is I think some of these things are very complicated. You know, there is some, I would think red tape, especially with that, there's all these ratios that require the number of, childcare instructors or childcare teachers per number of kids. I think those things are a little intense. They were relaxed, I believe, during COVID. I think they can still be relaxed. I also think there has to be some sort of serious conversation about some sort of subsidies or tax breaks. But I think this goes across, you know, this might have to be targeted for a wide range of people outside of low-income people. Again, to take nothing away from what they need. But again, this is not just a low-income problem. I don't even know if it's really a middle-class problem. I think this is a problem that is everywhere, much like worker shortage. And look, this is something where we talk to manufacturers, we talk to small business owners, we talk to, you know, in Milwaukee, in Waupun, in Fond du Lac, in La Crosse. I mean, every business almost seems like has a worker shortage problem. That's not something that, look, past the talking points, this is really not even a critique on anybody. Like, that's just not really going to be solved easily overnight.
Is that something we can even solve as a statewide thing? As far, because it's something that every state is dealing with to a certain extent.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be very hard. I mean, I think there's a number of issues that you have a lot of people who left the workforce and they're not coming back. I truly believe that we need to like overhaul the tax system. You know, this is where I start to think about like, well, what would happen if we got rid of the income tax and we had like an abundance of people that would come into the state, or you know, businesses would be able to pay a tremendous amount of more money. Like, how do we incentivize people to get out of off the sidelines and into the workforce? And that also implies for teaching too. Look, big news last week with all the funding, $1 billion to public schools, $280 million to private schools and charter schools. But look, we still have a teacher shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be a problem that really impacts schools in every sector all across the state. And I'm not 100% sure if that funding agreement is going to solve that problem.
Yeah. Well, you just said a lot, and there's so much I want to respond to, but we only have 30 seconds left, and I have to let you go. But you're going to be back next month.
Next month.
Next month, we'll have more to talk about. CJ Safer is the CEO of the Institute for Reforming Government. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. I'll see you next month. All right. We'll be back with Matt Miller for our monthly pop culture update when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. He is the culture editor over at On Milwaukee, where he writes about movies, television, sports, music, and beyond. And he joins us once a month to give us a little bit of a pop culture update of what we should see, what we should check out, maybe what we should not check out. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm a little tired. Summerfested, did my first Summerfest review of the year last night at Griffin, which was the EDM act at the Miller Lite Oasis. And I walked a lot, and I have reached the age where that is a dangerous thing to do.
They're so playing with fire that you might be a little sore the next day.
Yeah, the knees are not what they used to be, and I have been walking like the Terminator this whole day so far. The old Terminator, not the new, cool, sleek ones. But it was a great show. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a great show for EDM fans, and also for people who don't like EDM, honestly, because he busted out a guitar at various points.
Ooh.
And actually played some real music. He did. He busted out the drum machine and actually played alongside live with one of the songs. So there's a little bit more. It didn't feel quite like the cliche, like, takes out laptop, presses play,
and then fist
for the next 2 hours. So I thought that was really exciting. And now I'm excited tonight to see, I'm going to be at Sophie Tucker. That will be my next review from Milwaukee.com. And then Noah Kahn on Saturday. So you can stay tuned for all those coming up. Plus all the reviews everyone else at On Milwaukee.
I know. So how do you pick which acts you're going to review for On Milwaukee?
So I'm the youngest person on staff. So
are you really?
I am. Well, actually, we just hired Courtney Bondar, who's our great multimedia journalist. But I am the youngest long-term tenured employee, I guess. And so I kind of get free range for all the cool hip stuff.
Nice.
Like Molly and Bobby and Lori, they get their music. And if it's in the top 40, I kind of get first dibs at it in a lot of cases. But no, it really is. We're really quite lucky in that we kind of just pick the bands we want to see and go and see them and review them. So I'll be there 8 of the 9 days.
Nice.
I'm reviewing Smash Mouth, which is exciting because Smash Mouth is the band that made me not like concerts for
really?
A long time. So I loved All Star as a proper millennial growing up. I loved the song All Star.
The years start coming and they don't stop coming. That one.
Magazine rules and it hit the ground running. It makes sense not to live for fun. But anyways, and I love them. I had their album. I listened to All Star every day. And then they were performing at the All Star game, the MLB All Star game that year. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. And I turned it on and I see them performing and I'm like, wow, they're terrible. They are awful live. And I was like, if a great band like Smash Mouth can't perform live, then who can? What's the point of seeing a worse version? So for like 10 years of my life, I didn't go to any concerts because of Smash Mouth.
Wow.
Things have changed. Hopefully history doesn't repeat itself.
Maybe they've gotten better.
The concert at Summerfest this year.
That is.
So I believe they don't even have the old lead singer anymore. I believe it's a new lead singer now.
My Smash Mouth trivia is very, very stale. So I can't answer that for you. But I guess as far as kind of the general vibe of Summerfest, we had Matt Wild on earlier this week and we were just talking about like, this is kind of the first pre-pandemic full year of like people kind of looking at what's the turnout going to be, like the three weekend format, like kind of as far as Summerfest and its place in Milwaukee's annual calendar. Do you have any thoughts on if this year is means something and how, like,
Yeah, I do think this is kind of a, you know, obviously 2021 was the Septemberfest year. Last year was the first proper Summerfest back in summer, but with the three weekends. Obviously, it's three weekends again. I think it's always hard to judge each year against other years, because what if Jimmy Buffett isn't able to perform at the Amp? Well, that is a night without an Amp headliner, and that is a massive detriment to that night. How do you compare that then to 2019, 2018? Obviously, with the three weekend format, you have, I believe it's two less days from the prior Summerfest. So how do you really compare that as well? I think there is, you go through cycles with Summerfest, where I feel like when you're like a teen, you're upset at Summerfest for not being Lollapalooza and not being Coachella and not being, you know, one of the big fancy, cool, hip, you know, festivals. And then I feel like you grow up and you appreciate what Summerfest is, which is a massive gathering of all of this music, of all these types of people, everyone in the same place. And that's awesome. And I think we kind of need to stop comparing Summerfest to other festivals and just appreciate Summerfest for kind of the unicorn that it is, that you have Buddy Guy and an EDM concert and, you know, Eric Church all performing in the same place, all bringing people to the lakefront. I think that's great.
Good. I like that kind of optimist attitude as far as this is a great, unique thing, instead of sometimes the attitude of Summerfest and it's not what it used to be.
Yeah, and it's this idea of like, oh, they're trying to be everything for all people and you can't please everyone. And that's true, but then the more I feel like I grow up, the more I appreciate that they are trying to be something for everyone. It's really hard. And I think they generally pull it off pretty much every year. And, you know, we're only one day in so far, but so far so good for me.
Good. That's great to hear. Well, let's talk about some summer movies, because the summer blockbusters are upon us. Which ones have you seen so far? Which ones are you looking forward to seeing? Which ones should people maybe skip?
Yeah, so I'm very intrigued by No Hard Feelings, which is the new Jennifer Lawrence R-rated comedy coming out.
Ah, yes, season. I've seen a lot of ads for that.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like a test balloon, because comedies have had a really hard time in theaters. This is even pre-pandemic. It's been a really hard time to get people to come back out to the theaters for comedies. People don't think of it as big screen worthy entertainment, which is very sad, because I think comedy is best enjoyed in a crowd of people, not alone on my couch. So I think people are really keeping an eye on this Jennifer Lawrence comedy really intensely, because if this does well, maybe there's hope for the studio comedy. Maybe there's hope for, you know, the big screen and laughs back on the big screen. It looks like it had a really good Thursday night in terms of preview screenings. It might open on par with like a Cocaine Bear, which was a hit and made money. So that's good. So it seems like a positive step. I haven't seen it yet. For all I know, it's hot trash. But it would be nice if even hot trash could do well at the box office for comedies these days. You know, it feels a little bit like, can we get a win for the comedy, you know, back in theaters?
Well, because speaking of which, The Blackening at least has very good reviews. Have you seen The Blackening yet?
I have not yet. I've been hoping to, with all the Summerfest prep, wasn't able to get over to that one. But yeah, really good reviews.
I don't know.
And a pretty solid opening as well.
Oh, that's great to hear.
For a horror comedies don't tend to do very well. People like horror movies, people like comedies. You mix the two together, people get confused. But it did pretty well for its budget. I think it only cost like $5, $7 million to make, plus marketing, so double that. And it's already made $7 million at the box office, and the word of mouth is good. The reviews are good. So I think they're going to have a small hit on their hands. And I think Hollywood needs to pay attention to those small hits.
Yeah.
You know, The Flash has bombed. Elemental has bombed. Transformers probably going to bomb. Fast 6.
Fast 60.
Fast 10. all these movies have bombed, and all these movies cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make. They're all trying to hit grand slams all the time. What about hitting a single? What about just getting on base? That's what Hollywood needs to look at now, because people don't have the time, the money, the brain power to see every single blockbuster. So a Flash is going to fall through the cracks if people hear that it's not very good. A Transformers will fall through the cracks. Dungeons and Dragons, really fun movie. People didn't have the time for it. And it's a weird fantasy movie. So fell through the cracks. Those movies are going to lose their studios money. Whereas something like The Blackening, small movie, made for $5 million, only makes maybe $20 million. They're making money
back. In the black.
That's
good. That's
a return on investment. Maybe we should look back at that kind of stuff. That's why horror does so well, and horror keeps getting made, because they're generally cheap and they make a lot of money. And even if they don't make a lot of money, they at least make a little money because they were so cheap to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I did hear on a different program, I heard you on the radio pretty much saying, don't waste your time on Transformers.
I really had a bad time with it. And I am somebody who enjoyed the Michael Bay Transformers. Well, some of the Michael Bay Transformers movies. But you watch, I have a newfound appreciation for those dumb, brain-dead movies. Because Michael Bay at least makes a big movie.
Yeah.
That dude has a visual panache. He has a style. You know, they're dumber than rocks, but at least they're beautiful rocks, you know? Whereas you watch Transformers, it's just as dumb. It's just as kind of mind-numbing in a way, but there's no style to it. There's no cinematic quality to it. You watch that movie, it feels cheap and small. You get to the third act and you have a terrible action sequence in this like brown, gray, Peru digital world. It just looks like garbage. And, you know, The Flash has the same problem, honestly, that the third act turns into an awful trash garbage CGI desert fight. And it just leaves you coming out of the theater with a kind of taste in your mouth of like, that was a waste. That was a bad time. I feel soulless now.
That's a bummer. Well,
it is
you,
a bummer.
Are you
it
looking? Are you a Wes Anderson fan?
I am a Wes Anderson fan. I'm a convert to Wes Anderson. It took me a while to get there, but I actually really liked Grand Budapest Hotel, and I really liked The French Dispatch. It's me. Hi, I'm the weirdo who really liked The French Dispatch.
I don't think you're alone with that, but are you looking forward to Asteroid City?
Very much so. Okay. And that's actually out right now in Milwaukee, wide, actually. And I do want to let people know about another indie movie they should check out. It's only showing at the Downer right now. It's called Past Lives.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, small indie movie from A24 about a woman who runs into an old colleague, an old crush. Kind of seems like it kind of has Before Sunset vibes, but critically loved this year. One of the best reviewed movies of the year. The critics who've seen it love it. I'm very excited to check that out. And honestly, I don't know how much longer it's going to be in town. You've got Indiana Jones coming out soon. You've got a lot of stuff coming out soon. So these summer seasons, when an indie movie is in theaters, see it while you can, because it might not be around for much longer.
And also support small indie theaters like
Downer theaters.
And Oriental.
Support indie film. I mean, there's just not, the indie theaters have not recovered as well from the pandemic as your major, you know,
AMCs and Marcus.
Because it's easy to get people to show up to Spider-Man and Avatar. It takes a little bit more work to be like, hey, this Swedish romantic drama, really worth your time. Definitely this documentary about, you know, volcanologists. Trust us, it's good. It just takes a little bit more effort. So, and the indie film scene has also, they're catching up too after pandemic. So hopefully that starts building back up and we get more indie movies back on those screens. But while they're there, see them, please.
Absolutely. Well, in a minute, can you tell us what's going on with Turner Classic Movies?
Yeah, Warner Brothers are trying to kill it.
Boo.
In one of their continuing goals of being the worst studio in Hollywood, Warner Brothers fired a bunch of people, let go a bunch of people from Turner Classic Movies, critical members of that channel. And it got so bad that Martin Scorsese, Paul Thomas Anderson, and Steven Spielberg jumped on a call with the head of Warner Brothers. And it seems like it was like a talking to. It seems like it was like, hi, we are the three most famous filmmakers working right now. What are you doing to Turner Classic Movies? Cut it out.
Stop it.
So hopefully he listens to them. Rich dudes don't tend to do really well at being told not to do things, as we learned this past week in very horrible manner. So hopefully they keep Turner Classic Movies alive, because it's a great outlet for older films.
Yeah.
And the streaming universe doesn't care about movies made after 1980. So we need somebody out there caring about these movies, you know, preserving the history of cinema, of this art form.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Matt Miller, it is always so fun to have you here. We'll see you in July for another pop culture update. Have a great weekend. Have fun at Summerfest. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We got one more break, and we'll be back after that. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
One, two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on, join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes two,
welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Show just flew by today. Jane Matinera had the day off, but she will be back on Monday. Calvin, how did you like manning the board today for As Goes Wisconsin?
I had a blast. It was a great show.
Yeah, I thought so too. You got any? Are you going to Summerfest this weekend?
I am not.
Are you a Summerfest
person? I've been once. Not a big
You've only been to Summerfest once in your life.
Only been there one time.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Wisconsin.
Which city did you grow up in?
I grew up in Eagle, Waukesha County.
So our Michael who called earlier.
Yep.
So you grew up next to Old World, Wisconsin.
Yep.
Did you go to there more than you went to Summerfest?
Well, I think I've been there once too.
Just not a music fan, or it's just that scene is not for you?
I guess it's more the scene.
All right.
I definitely love music. It's hard. I don't believe anyone who says they don't like music.
I think that's true. I think I would say I'm someone who likes music, but I don't, like, if you ask me who played, like, I don't know a lot about music. Like, being able to hear a song and be like, that's from that album and that artist, and knowing, like, who the bands are and, like, the genres and stuff like that. Like, I don't know that. I just know if I like a song or not. It's kind of how I feel about wine.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no,
was it good or not?
I feel the
same way.
I
don't know anything actually about what makes it good. I just know if I like it or not.
For sure.
Right?
I agree.
All right. Well, thank you for stepping in today.
Yeah, no
problem.
Appreciate it. Anytime.
But, yeah, so as we wrap up the day, I wanted to give a little shout-out to the nappers out there, the people who take, you know, who find time in their busy days to take a nap. And because it turns out that there may be a casual link between habitual napping and larger total brain volume. So my husband will be very happy to hear this. But regular napping makes your brain larger, apparently. And I don't know how this is not a bigger headline, because this feels like a lot of people would like to have this information. But it's a conclusion that was reached by a new study that compared people age 40 to 69 who were genetically predisposed to take naps versus people who weren't. And the researchers found that the nappers, through their naps, had bigger brains that were equivalent to people 2.6 to 6.5 years younger. So I guess the study does have limitations, such as finding that napping does not affect three other brain measures, but it does apparently preserve brain volume. So take that for what it's worth as far as justifying any naps that you were planning on taking during the week or during the weekend. You know, you've earned it, and also it's good for your brain. But the other, I guess Pat talked about this a little bit in his weirdest story. But in fact, I know yesterday we talked a little bit about the submersible. They did have more of a conclusion yesterday. And I have to say, as far as, like, I think that is a relief to know that it was just something that was an implosion, that it was over before they even knew what was happening, versus the alternate scenario they were putting out there as far as being stuck in something for and like counting down the hours until you just suffocated. But man, what a weird story that just captivated all of us. But and it's interesting, and this is probably a topic for something else, but we talked about it yesterday as far as like comparing this to the other extreme adventures that the very wealthy do. And I saw an interesting take on this as far as likely this story will not be a warning to other people as far as, hey, maybe don't do this. Because they compared to, and this was mentioned yesterday, I think Jack called in and talked about this, but the book Into Thin Air, which was based on the story of the people who did not make it when they tried to climb Mount Everest. And yet now we're at the point where people, you know, young people, old people, because of the assistance they can pay for and kind of, you know, if it's expensive, it's by paying a certain price, it makes things more accessible for anyone to be able to do, so long as you have money, that the danger of it becomes less and less. And so the danger does not become a mitigating factor. So it's like in a lot of, he's basically making the argument that this will probably not be the last time we see someone who tries to go down into some one kind of like a minivan that can go 3 miles below the water and risk instant implosion and your body disintegrating in order to have the thrill of seeing the Titanic. And that if anything, this potentially, especially with this much media attention, could only create more appeal and awareness that this is even an option. And I can't wait to see how this translates to space travel and the people who are like, that seems awesome. I don't care how dangerous it is. We'll just continue to pay people who can make it less dangerous for us. So I thought that was an interesting take on what was probably the largest, one of the biggest stories of the week. But that'll do it for us this week. This has been a really fun week of shows, and looking forward to next week as we round out the end of June already, which is wild how quickly time is going. But to everyone who called in this week, everyone who texted in this week, thank you for being part of the show. As always, if you missed any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or Apple or Spotify or wherever you find podcasts. Also, make sure that you download the Civic Media fancy new app. Whether you're on Android or Apple, in your app store, you can download Civic Media and take us wherever you go. You can get all of our stations there. You can flip between the stations to find the best show that you're on is on at that point. You can text us and call us and check out our website from the app. Certainly check it out. It's really cool. And with that, happy Friday. Stick around for our noon newscast. This has been As Goes Wisconsin. We'll see you on Monday. Your eyes are saying, talk to me. Talk, talk, but my talk, attitude is, boy, don't waste your time. Talk to me. But I won't say a word, cause it just might be somebody else's same old line. All night long, all night long, we'll just be standing here, cause somebody might do somebody wrong. All night long, I will be sleeping with the television. Television on. Oh, sleeping with the television.